role of the arts is to question, interrogate, to listen, to respond. Those responses may be difficult, challenging, provocative, and that's the point.
Somewhere on the spectrum of amazed and terrified.
We rely on artists to inspire us, move us, and compel us to dazzle and rearrange our ways of thinking about absolutely everything.
But I just had this vision of bringing people from across our community together.
The expressions of who we are as a culture and a people.
A historical archive of our times.
Artists create the future. Future.
Welcome to Best of Art Beat, your weekly podcast which champions the best of the arts and cultural conversations we're having in Boorloo and beyond. I'm Beck Bowman, and today on the program we interviewed Penny Shaw. She jumped into the studio to chat all about the Our Women on the Podium program. It's a unique conducting and leadership event which platforms female West Australian musicians. I also spoke with Australian Short Story Festival Chair Susan Medaglia about this year's event at the Fremantle Arts Centre. And we celebrate the 2022 winner of the Fremantle TAG Hungerford Award for an unpublished manuscript. The winner, Molly Schmidt, wrote Salt River Road, a story informed by the knowledge and wisdom of Albany's traditional owners, which navigates the challenges and the depths of grief. There is a symposium happening at the Methodist Ladies College from the 21st to the 30th of October. It is all about women on the podium. It's a conducting symposium. Penny Shaw is coordinating it, and she's joining us to talk to us about why it's important to get women on the podium. Penny, welcome.
Well, thank you. Good morning. Well, the main reason, I suppose, the focus of this on getting women on the podium is because 95% of conductors worldwide are men. Now, that's quite a good figure compared to a few years ago, but it's still 95%. It's still one of those kind of boss jobs that women often shy away from.
So it was 99.9%, now it's 95%.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So what skills do you need to be a conductor? Are they special man-only skills?
No, not at all. And I actually think that women are often very good conductors. I think partly you can't be what you can't see. So if you've grown up just seeing men in those positions, and it was sort of is that very much that leadership role, the kind of the CEO, the chairman of the board role. And I think women often didn't put themselves forward. But really, the skills required are very much they're sort of multitasking skills. They're looking after everyone in the orchestra. Often if you're conducting an opera or a ballet, you're also watching what's going on stage, and you're communicating that to the orchestra. For symphony, you're not just, I think people often think they're just keeping everyone in time, but professional musicians don't need to be kept in time. What they need is interpretation and inspiration.
Mm. So the conductor is kind of the artistic director of the orchestra in that particular piece that they're playing.
Yeah, so they'll be able to play the notes as written, but what the conductor will do is really put their stamp on it and decide, the tempi decide, and just really inspire the orchestra to take it to that next level. So you're not just hearing a piece of music, you're hearing something that's going to really inspire you and make you feel something. It's that ability to make you kind of, you know, gasp and feel emotion and all the other things we want to do when we listen to classical music or any music, really.
And Penny, you're not a conductor yourself, but you are convening this particular symposium. You're a
yes.
singer.
Yes.
When you have been conducted, so you've been in a singing situation, you've been in a choir and you have had the experience of someone conducting the music that you make, what is that experience like? Like, what difference does it make to you as a performer to have a good conductor versus maybe one that's not so great?
Yes, well, I'm actually an opera singer, so I have, been conducted for, like 20, 25 years. It makes a huge difference. It makes a huge difference if you're in the chorus to the ensemble, keeping everyone together and that guidance. But as a soloist, it's really you can feel very safe with a conductor, or you can feel safe to be able to express the role as you want it, or sometimes you can just feel incredibly nervous and conductors can make you feel very anxious that you're going to do it wrong. And some of them are a nightmare. I'm not going to lie. Some of them can be a nightmare. It's all about them. You want, you know, you must look at me for this, and, you know, you didn't, that was wrong, and this was that. So what you really need when you're being conducted is somebody that makes you feel inspired and that you completely trust that if you want to hold that note a little bit longer, then they're going to keep the orchestra waiting for you. You know, it's all the difference in the world, really, having a good conductor.
And none of those things are gender specific. So there is no reason for 95% of conductors around the world being men.
No.
What?
No, not at all. It's just they often come up through those, certainly in England, through the kind of choral scholarship, sort of Oxbridge kind of route, and then they go straight into conducting. But there's no reason why it should be mostly men.
Women on the Podium is looking at changing this situation and encouraging more women to learn about conducting, see if they like it, maybe, you know, conduct some people themselves. It's a week-long symposium and it's starting with the premiere of the movie The Conductor. So this is a documentary that follows the story of the world's most famous female conductor, Maren Alsop. What's so special about Maren?
Well, you know what? I haven't seen that movie yet, and I absolutely can't wait to see it on tonight, 6:30 MLC. If people want to buy tickets, you can still get tickets online. I think it's through Human Tix. So I'm so looking forward to seeing that. My understanding is that she, as a child, wanted to be a conductor, and she was told repeatedly that that was not something that she could do. As a girl, she's really funny because she's not that old. It's not like, you know, she's not in her 90s. Like, this is really in very recent history. And of course, she broke through that glass ceiling and became, yeah, the first woman to ever conduct an American symphony orchestra, to do it for be the artistic director. So I'm really looking forward to seeing how she did it. Hearing some wonderful music. It looks like a fantastic film.
And that's happening tonight at Methodist Ladies College.
Yeah, that's right. And that's the opening event of this symposium, which is going to last, 10 days. We've got Alice Farnham, who's come out from the UK. She's been running a similar program in England for the last 10 years and has really made a massive difference to the role of female conductors. She's been a conductor herself for many years and has really tried to bring on and mentor younger women.
Amazing. So Alice is going to be here in Perth. It's so, like, I will admit to sometimes feeling a little bit overwhelmed at the moment with how many people are coming, like how many things are happening to look forward to and to welcome these people who have been doing amazing things overseas, and we haven't had the opportunity to kind of have them in person for the last few years. But this is definitely something that is genuinely exciting and worthy of going along and being part of. If people want to meet Alice, if people want to learn from Alice, are they still able to sign up for some of the classes that are happening, some of the workshops?
Unfortunately not. No, it was all done by most of the applications actually happened at the beginning of the year in February. We did have one more open class, but that's also now full. However, if people are interested, they can email me, Penny at Perth Symphony Orchestra, and I can let them know about future things that are coming up, because the program does run all year. This is the sort of culmination of it, but there are various events. And people can be considered, you know, have to put in applications, videos, etc. So tonight really is the best chance to come along and meet Alice and meet the people on the programme. There'll be a chance to get to know everyone a little bit more and come along and express an interest. People don't have to have any experience of conducting, but obviously, you know, you have to be a certain standard of musician to, you know,
to be able to interpret the music.
Well, yeah, you need to be kind of tertiary level musically trained or a music professional of some kind. to be on this program, but there definitely will be more opportunities down the track.
Perth Symphony Orchestra has, of course, been at the forefront of introducing different ways of presenting classical music in Perth, and they have a year-long program full of wonderful music that you can go along and see and experience with the whole family at different times of the year. So make sure that you follow them as well. Penny, thank you so much for making the time to talk to us on Artbeat today, and thank you for organising such a great program.
Well, it's been really interesting for me because I knew very little about conducting, and now I know a little bit more. I also know that it's not for me. It looks absolutely terrifying. I'll just stick to singing. It's very funny, actually. I've never really considered what the conductors do. It's really weird. We just stand on stage and, you know, do our thing, and then, you know, you expect them to do theirs, but you haven't really considered all the technical aspects. And I guess that goes the other way around as well. So we all stick to what we're best at.
But you know what? I'm sure that will make you a better performer. Like, understanding, yes, what the, you know, being able to work with the conductor more effectively.
Yes, and actually it's very competitive for our Perth Symphony Orchestra musicians, who obviously we need musicians for the conductors to practice conducting. I should just say, actually, we've got some amazing support from our from Mindaroo and from West Farmers on this, because it's obviously very expensive. It's, I can practice my singing at home, but if I want to practice conducting, I have to pay some people to come along, like a lot of people. You know, nobody can afford to hire an orchestra, like nobody. So that's really why we need the funding and why this is such an amazing program. But what I was saying is that the musicians themselves are queuing up to be
conducted
in the workshop. Yeah, because they learn so much. So they'll be playing, but they're also listening to Alice talking to the conductors about, you know, that communication, and so it's a win-win for everyone, really. Everyone learns so much.
Amazing. Thanks again, Penny. Have a wonderful day and enjoy the movie tonight.
Yes, I certainly will. I'm very much looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
That was Penny Shaw from Perth Symphony Orchestra talking about the Women on the Podium Conducting Symposium. There is a film showing tonight called The Conductor. It's a feature-length documentary about the famous female conductor, Maren Alsop.
The role of the arts is to question, interrogate, to listen, to respond. Those responses may be difficult, challenging, provocative, and that's the point.
Somewhere on the spectrum of amazed and terrified.
We rely on artists.
We are talking about all the wonderful, creative art stuff that is happening in our city. And one of those is the Australian Short Story Festival. It's happening at Fremantle Arts Centre from October 28th to the 30th. That's next weekend, and it celebrates this beautiful form of storytelling. Susan, welcome.
Thank you, Beck. Thanks for having me.
This is one of your babies, almost. Mm-hmm. You've been involved in this festival for about 6 years now, and it's a festival that goes between Adelaide, Melbourne and Perth.
That's right.
So, nice little triangle of accessibility for people to get to. What was it that made you go, do you know what, we need a short story festival in Australia?
Well, it was originally founded 6 years ago by two publishers, Caroline Wood from Margaret River Press and Anna Solding from Midnight Sun in Adelaide. And they were both publishing short story collections, and they decided it was time we beefed it up, we promoted the form, because I think there's been, in Australia anyway, not in the US, not in Europe or the UK, but in Australia there's been this kind of assumption that short stories are superficial, ephemeral, easy to write, you know, you can knock one off in an evening. But there's been a real resurgence now in Australia in the last maybe 15 years, 10 years of publication of single author collections. So I think publishers are getting on board, readers are getting on board, and the festival is about celebrating the pleasures and the challenges of the short form, because you'll find short stories in every period of history, every culture. You know, they matter. They help us discover who we are, who we might become. They give a voice to the powerless and the vulnerable, but they also explore our common humanity, the things that connect us. So yeah. We love it.
I think that there's this kind of idea that a short story is what you write before you write your proper novel.
Correct. Yep. It's an apprenticeship. So you kind of hone your craft. But I don't think that's the case at all, and many people would agree with me. So I've written three collections of short stories and two novels, and I've never thought of short story writing as an apprenticeship to writing the novel. They're completely different beasts. They require different ways of thinking mm-hmm. about our life in time. They require different kinds of skills, and they have different pleasures, I think, for writers and for readers.
I think perhaps a controversial statement, maybe, for all the writers out there who are, you know, waving their pens at me. Perhaps one of the things about short stories is the space that it leaves for readers to create and to join in on the storytelling themselves. There's, you're not as spoon-fed, perhaps, every single detail of what's happening. There's a lot of room for you to create your own interpretation in the spaces between.
Yeah, I don't think that's a controversial statement at all. I think it's a very accurate description of how short stories work, because they are often about the unsaid or the implied. They're about what can't be or what must not be spoken. And I think you're absolutely right. It's about the art of suggestion. So they leave a lot of room for reader interpretation. And they respect readers' intelligence, because they assume that readers will be able to, as it were, read between the lines, to infer, to interpret what's kind of not there often. And part of the skill of short story writing is to, I think, create the illusion that beyond those relatively few words on the page, there's a bigger world. There's a great quote from Alice Munro, who's the only short story writer to have won the Nobel Prize for Literature. And she says that every short story is at least two mm-hmm. short stories. Yeah. So it is all about suggestion and a kind of resonance beyond the words on the page.
We're talking to Susan Medaglia about the Australian Short Story Festival happening next weekend at Fremantle Arts Centre. Susan, I guess as well the short story has a special place in today's society. I mean, what a phrase, but in a time when we are so busy and our attention is being kind of sought by so many different places, a short story can be a perfect antidote to that feeling of being pushed around and being begged for someone to, you know, someone on Instagram to pay attention to us. We can sit down and just immerse ourselves in this little world for a few pages.
I think that's great. They are good for the time poor, if you like, or the time pressured. And they're also a great resource for teachers, because we know that increasingly, I'm going to sound like an old lady now, which I am, but we do know that increasingly young people are reluctant readers. And so if you're an English or a lit teacher at school, short stories are great, because they're you can get a lot of good teaching done in terms of how literature works, how stories work. And, you know, you ask your students to read 4 or 5 pages and rather than a 300-page or 500-page novel.
Do you know what? And those novels have their places. But maybe they require a bit more of an investment on the part of the reader. And a short story festival that celebrates this form after so many years of, I guess, publishing being really reluctant to invest in these collections is amazing. What can people get out of attending the festival?
Well, we have what we think is a terrific lineup. So the Friday the 28th, we have two workshops which are, alas, all sold out. So Night Parrot Press is running a workshop on flash fiction, and Brooke Donnell, wonderful short story writer who has a new novel coming out in November, she's gone over to the dark side, as we say, she's running a workshop as well. But opening night is a gala celebration. We have dispensed with formal speeches. The Fremantle Mayor will be giving a short speech. Auntie Marie Taylor will be doing a Welcome to Country. But the thrust of the evening is storytelling through music. So the wonderful Perth actor Sarah McNeil is our host for the evening, and she's hosting singer-songwriters who will be talking about songwriting and then performing them. So we've got Barry Davola, Lucky Oceans and David Milroy, Little Lord Street Band, and from over east, Jane and the Rain. It's going to be a fabulous evening, and for $20, the princely sum of $20, you get entertainment, food and wine. And there are still places left. We would love people to come.
Yeah, it's place to be next Friday night.
Yeah. And then we've got 2 days of panel discussions and interviews with writers from overseas, all around Australia, and some of our, you know, most loved local writers. And I would like to stress that I think some people think a literary festival and a short story festival in particular is a kind of niche event. But what we're really aiming to do is to engage people with the form. So we, how can I describe this? We don't want it to be solemn. It won't be solemn. Mm. You know, there'll be some serious discussions, but everything will be entertaining and engaging because we have a fabulous lineup, not only of writers, but the writers themselves are, you know, are great talkers, great performers. So, and we're doing everything from a discussion of why the short story. We've got John Kinsella, I think WA, one of an internationally acclaimed writer, on a couple of panels. We have writing femininity and writing masculinity, just to be, you know, gender equal. We have stories about speculative fiction, panels about speculative fiction. We have, I think, what promises to be a wonderful discussion about what happens when your publisher or editor wants to chuck out your favourite story from the collection.
That sounds like a very important conversation.
Yeah, and that's, you know, quite a few writers have had that happen. The story that you hold dear to your heart, the story that you're most proud of, and the publisher says, nah, sorry. So there's a bit of wrangling going on there.
What do you do in that situation?
Well, someone who edits as well, the rule is always the writer has the last word. Mm. So unless the writer's written something offensive or defamatory, you have to. A good editor goes with the writer. we've also got I should just go backtrack. All the sessions on Saturday, all the sessions on Sunday for the whole day, $20. I mean, it's an absolute bargain. We also have children's storytelling, Story Lab for Kids, which is organised by wonderful Paperbird Bookshop in Fremantle. We've got Christy Byrne, Auntie Marie Taylor and Ashka. I had the pleasure of being at a writer's festival with Ashka a few years ago up in Geraldton, and she is the most dynamic, amazingly clever storyteller. Mm. And that's free. The storytelling for kids goes, it's on the Sunday, goes from 9:30 to 12:30, and it's free for parents and children. So we
Ashka
hope
is a visual storyteller. Oh, she's a graphic artist, and
she's amazing. Yeah,
just I think they contributed or they provided the graphic art for Stars in Their Eyes,
yeah,
the young adult book. Recommend. Susan, while we're recommending books, let's recommend your short story collection, shall we?
Well, I've got three collections which date back from 2007. And my most recent publication is a collection of short fiction called Miniatures. But we have so many wonderful short story writers. If I can recommend some others, and
you're like, no, take the spotlight off me.
It's not about me. The festival is not about me. It's about all these wonderful writers that we have. One of my favourite writers, Carol Lefevre from Adelaide, has a new collection called The Tower, which we'll be launching at the festival. But if you haven't read her first collection, Murmurations, it is one of the most exquisite collections of short stories I've had the pleasure to read. Oh, I should also mention that we're having a panel discussion called Want to Get Your Story Published? So three publishers are offering practical and timely advice to maximise your chance of receiving a quote, we are delighted to accept... So we've got Georgia Richter from Fremantle Press, Kate Noske, editor of Westerly, and Anna Solding from Midnight Sun. So they'll be giving tips on how to get published.
And all that for $20.
Yep.
The Australian Short Story Festival is definitely one to check out. You can check them out online. They have all the programs are on their website. You can go and have a look, or you can check out the Fremantle Arts Centre as well. It's happening next weekend, and it is a celebration of the form of the short story. Susan, thank you so much for making time to come in and chat about this festival today.
Thanks, Vic. Thanks very much.
The role of the arts is to question, interrogate, to listen, to respond. Those responses may be difficult, challenging, provocative, and that's the point.
Somewhere on the spectrum of amazed and terrified.
We rely on artists.
Today, though, we are all about the arts, including the wonderful world of literature. We are celebrating this year's winner of the TAG Hungerford Award. The TAG Hungerford Award happens every 2 years. It's sponsored by the City of Fremantle and Frio Press. It is a prize where the winner gets a cash prize as well as a publishing contract, which is a massive deal and really does help with newly published writers to get ahead and keep creating amazing work for us to enjoy. The winner this year is Molly Schmidt, and she has joined us in studio to talk about her manuscript, Salt River Road, a manuscript that will soon be a book that she can hold in her hands. Molly, welcome.
Hi, Beck.
So tell me about the TAG Hungerford Award. How did you first find out about it, and when did you decide to submit this work?
I've been keeping my eye on the Hungerford for a while. A lot of authors that have won are authors that I love and really admire. But I was in Albany. I'd just moved down for a stint of work down there, and was like in the middle of unpacking boxes and sorting out a whole new temporary life there, and kind of was giving myself the clear of, oh, I couldn't possibly submit. I'm too busy. This is too stressful. But I'd written it on my whiteboard, had it in big capital letters, Hungerford Award and the closing date. And there was a certain point where it just kept glaring at me on the whiteboard, so decided I had to do it. So, yeah, it was pretty stressful.
You're like, this
but
whiteboard. This whiteboard is sending me a very clear message right now. So this manuscript that you produced, is it your first book length writing, or have you written before and just not had it published?
It's a story that I've been working on for a really long time, so it feels like it's been going on forever, but it is, yeah, the first and only at the moment.
Is there going to be more? Or are you like, don't ask me more?
I don't know. I feel so shocked that I don't even know what comes next, but I'm really excited for the characters that I've made up in this book, that you're actually going to get to meet them, which is exciting.
And it's a coming-of-age story, one of my favourite kinds of stories, set in regional Western Australia in the 70s, favourite time period. It's something that draws on your own very personal experience as well of losing your own father to cancer, but it is very much fiction. It's also written in collaboration or with very very deep respect to the traditional custodians of the Great Southern Region. How did you integrate that into your novel?
So that was because as a non-Indigenous writer, I really wanted to make sure I was writing a book that was still inclusive of the Noongar people from Albany, where I'm from. I work in journalism, and having that background, I knew that I couldn't do that on my own. I really needed their help, and I needed them to, I guess, let me know what was okay to write and okay to do. It was over a couple of years. I consulted with 5 incredible elders from Albany, and it looked different with each of them, but it was lots of cups of tea and lots of storytelling and their advice. And I would share excerpts with them and work out some guidelines. Like, I couldn't name sacred places or write from the perspective of Noongar people. That was really important. But they kind of helped me work out those rules, and then they got really invested themselves. They loved seeing little bits of themselves and things that they'd inspired in different scenes. And, yeah, it became a really beautiful connection with each of them.
We are talking to Molly Schmidt about her winning manuscript, Salt River Road. It's just won the TAG Hungerford Award. and she has been talking to us about the ways that she ensured that the representation of traditional owners of the Great Southern Region was done in as respectful a way as is possible. Is that relationship with these people still ongoing? Are you still working with the elders that you have developed those relationships with?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been on the phone to most of them this morning. Lots of them have become almost like honorary grandparent figures for me. One of them in particular, Uncle Lester, we ring each other probably once every fortnight. They're really, really special people. And I think that's what was so important, was the connection was authentic. And it was more about that than the book. Like, if there was something that they weren't comfortable with, that was so important to me. And yeah, I feel like regardless of the book, they're people that I'm really excited to keep learning from and getting to know.
So it sounds like actually, while, you know, you might have experienced a little bit of pressure from your whiteboard to get the manuscript in, it sounds like actually this is a project you've been working on for quite a while now.
Yeah, it kind of, the first time that I wrote about Rose, who is the main character, I'm maybe 16.
Yeah, wow.
Which is over 10 years ago now. but yeah, that story obviously got left behind and changed and, you know, put in the bottom of my desk drawer for years at a time. But it's been maybe the last 2 years that I've been working on it really doggedly. but yeah, it's exciting to actually think that someone might be able to hold it soon.
What is that timeline like? Do you know?
So I've been speaking with Claire this morning from Fremantle Press, and she told me that possibly November next year, which is wild.
So close. How do you then, like, what's that publishing schedule like? Like, what is it? What does that process entail now of getting that book out there?
So I've been literally finding out about that on the drive here with Claire. So I think it means some editing and working out some changes. It's definitely not quite ready just yet. So yeah, polishing. I'm not really sure. I'm going to be learning a lot as we go, but I'll find out a lot today, I think.
And that's the joy of winning a prize like this. It's also the joy of getting that letter from a publisher that says, yes, we are going to put this work out there. Molly, you are still in Albany?
No, so I've moved back up here now. I grew up there and then moved back for a 6-month stint recently, which finished about 4 months ago. So back in South Fremantle, which is Albany and Fremantle are my favourite places in the world.
Back in South Fremantle and hopefully bringing her way with words to the people of Fremantle as well. You've been listening to The Best of Artbeat. You can always restream the show in full on rtrfm.com.au or tune in live each Friday from 9 to 12 p.m. on RTRFM 92.1.